All right, folks, welcome back. I want to thank you for joining me for these last 7 days or so. I've had a really good time. It's always nice to have a soapbox, a little platform to talk about your beliefs and the stuff that you've uncovered. And it's also great to allow or be allowed to put people like Bert, Hal Anthony, and Vicki Davis, and all these people who don't get any kind of media attention, don't get any chance to advertise their services and the things they're doing. These are people, as I said at the beginning of first day, these are people that are walking the walk, not just talking the talk. And that's why I had every single person that you've heard on with me. And Bert, I think, is probably very, very fitting for that particular description. But before we get back to Bert, it's time to play everyone's favorite game show, America in Jeopardy. Today's show is going to go back all the way to the founding of America to show that we've been in jeopardy ever since. This founding father said the following: the Constitution is a mere thing of wax in the hands of the judiciary, which they may twist and shape to any form they please. That would be Thomas Jefferson, one of the most oft-quoted founding fathers of that Constitution. If Jefferson were to be saying that in his papers, his Federalist papers, all the way back then, that the Constitution is a mere thing of wax in the hands of the judiciary, we have to really start thinking about what that means. Let me just give you a few more quotes that might concern you considering who they're by. Let's hear what Justice Antonio Scalia, I hope I'm saying his name right.
Scalia.
Scalia. He's one of the current justices of the Supreme Court, I believe. And here's his quote. He says, "Day by day, case by case, the court is busy redesigning a constitution for a nation I do not recognize." You see, what happened with our Constitution is it's very easy to explain. Why is it easy to explain? Well, Jefferson, once again, the founding father, explains it really well. He says that, quote, "At the establishment of our constitutions, the judiciary bodies were supposed to be the most helpless and harmless members of the government. Experience, however," and of course that's experience in his own lifetime after the Constitution was passed, he says, "experience, however, soon showed in what way they were to become the most dangerous." So he says here that while the court, the judiciary body, the branch of government in that three-tiered checks and balances system, while this was supposed to be the least powerful, it quickly became the most powerful in the government. And this really boils down to one important thing, and that is, of course, the advent of when the courts very early on claimed the right, basically, of what they call the Due Process Clause. This Due Process Clause is not necessarily constitutional. It is simply claimed as a constitutional right. And that, my friends, is basically how attorneys took over this government. And again, to remind you, we have an attorney for president that's in the Bar Association. We have about 56% of our senators that are barred attorneys and about 36% of Congress who are barred attorneys, meaning that we really have no separation of power. We are run by this private association called the Bar. Bert.
Yes, sir.
Take it away.
Well, that's all true. The thing that we need to keep in mind, though, is that it really doesn't matter what happens in those Supreme Courts. It doesn't matter what any decision that comes down. All those decisions can only apply to those people who are part of the United States, that District of Columbia or those territories. Our rights, you know, if you, you know, like Clint just said, you know, they claimed a certain right. Well, you also have a right to claim all kinds of rights. And the fourth branch of government that no one, you know, in the media wants to talk about, you know, is the grand jury and the jury. You know, that is in fact the real government. They are in fact the ones who can define or redefine, if you want to say, something in that Constitution. So whatever a Supreme Judge has previously defined as meaning X, Y, Z, the people can come back and say, no, we don't believe that that's what it means. We believe it means what it actually says. It's not written in Chinese. I think I can understand what it says, and it says this. And therefore, this case is being determined on the fact that we understand what this says here, and that person is free to go, or that police officer has to pay this man for violating a right because we understand what it means. We do not understand what the Supreme Court said. So that's what we need to put in our heads.
Well, let's also remind people of my personal favorite section of U.S. Code, which is the Civil Rights Section, 42 U.S. Code, Section 1981, which states equal rights under the law. And it states that all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States, a very important way to start a sentence, because it states all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States. So all corporations within the jurisdiction of the main corporation shall have the same right in every state and territory to make and enforce contracts, to sue, be parties, give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit, not right, but benefit of all laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens. And this is the kicker, because this is the important part. All persons within the jurisdiction of the United States shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and extractions of every kind, and to no other. This, folks, is civil rights. This is equal rights under the law. And we have to understand that because of the language of this particular U.S. Code, this particular section, this does not apply to me, and it does not apply to you, it does not apply to Bert, it does not apply to anyone unless they acknowledge that they are a person, meaning that they are a citizen of the United States falling under the jurisdiction of the United States. Very, very important to read the language, not just read the section, but read the language. And you know what you were saying earlier about these words that we use every day in our normal language, we the people use every day, those words are like a foreign language to attorneys. Just the word understand is an amazing thing to comprehend what that means. When a police officer asks you, do you understand the rights that I've read to you? In other words, you're limiting your rights to what he's read you, and you say, yes, sir, I understand. You've actually consented that you have the right to allow that cop to basically say anything he wants to, because you've agreed to the right to allow anything you say to be used against you. Does that sound like a right? Does a right sound like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and extractions of every kind? Is that a right, really? I mean, is that an equal right? We got to think about the way these things are put into law. There is nothing good about equal rights, if that's what government considers a right, I don't want any part of it.
Yes, that's the. I don't know. I mean, I've tried explaining some of these things to some very educated people, and you know, there's such a huge mental block that, I don't know if people just created it on themselves or if you, you know, through all the propaganda and everything, because I'm finding out the people who watch, you know, more TV and actually the people that are all involved in listening to some people, like I used to listen to, like Rush Limbaugh and some of these so-called right-wing people who seem to be on the path of freedom, you know, those people just don't get it that people like Rush Limbaugh and the like are working for the other side, just like the left wing is working for the other side, because they're all working for the same United States. They're all there to keep you under the same umbrella of submission.
How do you imagine the thing that you've been taught all your life, that there are two sides? It turns out that there are no sides. It's all the same thing. It's how do you break that kind of conditioning? Everything in life is set up to be a choice. You have a choice of going left or right, up or down, sideways or sideways. You know, there's a choice. It always has to be a competition and a choice, and that's what everything in media tells you. And so when you're faced with the conclusion, with the reality that no, you don't have a choice. These people are representing the same law. They're representing the same code. They are of the same private associations acting as political parties. They're not government. They're they're agents of the devil when it comes down to it. That's a very difficult thing for people to, get rid of their conditioning, their compartmentalization. That's very, very difficult. And again, I think one of the things that I thank God for is the ability to empathize with those people, and I think you have the same empathy because you were there. We were there before we read all these codes and all these things. We were there, so we can understand how that happens.
Yes, yes, and you know, like for example, like that word submission. You know, in this dictionary, if you look at it, it says a yielding to authority, and then it says a citizen is bound to submit to the laws, basically like a child to his parents, a servant to his master. Now, why would they include something like a servant to his master within the word citizen? Because it's true. You know?
Well, it's your right to be the servant and to be subservient to the master. You understand? It's your right. You see how they sell that? It's your right to have a king in a country where it's supposed to be a republic. It's your right.
Oh man, it's so much. I wish we could take 10 years and condense it to a couple of hours so we could get all this information out to folks, you know. What were some of the specifics that you wanted to touch on?
Well, you know, what I'm really interested now, if you want to, I'd like you to get into how you, basically how you got rid of your social security number, how easy it actually is. It's not as difficult as you would think. Now, getting rid of the card itself, I don't know, and getting rid of the records, that might be a different story. But I also wanted to get into what you're actually doing for people because, you know, see, what I find so interesting about what you're doing on behalf of people, and you've actually made this into a business where you can actually support yourself while helping people, which is so rare nowadays, but you're actually telling people and going with saying, look, you don't hire an attorney. If you hire an attorney, you are becoming a ward of the court. You're admitting to your insanity. You're not able to represent yourself. You have to have an attorney to do it for you. You've then basically lost your case. You're bound by what the court says. You've become a ward of their jurisdiction. But what you're doing is so unique to what everything else I've heard as far as remedies and solutions out there, because you're saying, no, do not go to court. There can be no jurisdiction established if you never step into court in the first place. And I find that to be a fascinating approach.
Yeah, well, whenever you show up to court, as soon as they call your name and you cross the bar and approach the little microphone there, the man there in the black robe always says, for the record, blah, blah, blah has appeared. Okay? Now, if you look at what appeared means in their legal language, it means submission. It means that you are now there to submit yourself to their laws. So to appear and then argue that they don't have jurisdiction is like showing up to a tennis match with your tennis racket and your cute tennis skirt and saying you don't want to play tennis. Everybody's going to look at you like you're nuts. So what's the other, 180 degrees of that is you don't appear. But in order to keep these thugs from issuing a warrant for your arrest, you send someone as your messenger or your ambassador or however way you want to describe them to go there and speak on your behalf. And they're not going to go there and argue with the judge or anything like that. They're just simply going to show up and they're going to say, well, Your Honor, and you want to make sure your messengers are very respectful, to these criminals, and say, Your Honor, for the record, I am here as a messenger for blah blah blah, and I'm just simply here in a limited capacity to ensure that you receive the papers that were filed by Freeman blah blah blah. And then if the judge says, no, I haven't had a chance to see that, I don't know what you're talking about, I say, well, I just happen to have an extra set right here for you. You give it to the bailiff gives it to the judge, and of course the judge is going to go like, well, are you an attorney? And you say, by heavens, no, Your Honor. If you want to be a clown, you could say, please do not insult me.
Yeah, exactly.
But just keep everything professional, and says, no, I am not. And then he could say, well, do you realize that you could be getting in trouble for practicing law? And you say, I'm under no impressions, and I'm giving no impressions of practicing any kind of law. I'm just simply here as a messenger, and Freeman, blah, 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 has the right to send in a messenger on his behalf, which is true. You have the right to do that. And what's going to happen in that situation is that judge is going to get frustrated because he wasn't able to get you there, and he's going to throw smokes, and he's going to joke and say, well, we got to have a Mr. blah, blah, blah be here, because if he doesn't show up, I'm going to issue a warrant for his arrest. So I'm resetting this here for 2 weeks from now. And if he doesn't show up, I'm going to issue a warrant for his arrest. And then you show up as the messenger again. you in fact appeared on his behalf. And because you appeared, he cannot issue a warrant. So you have to keep doing that until they realize that you're not going to play their game.
Well, and it's also a matter of getting to the point where it starts costing the court, remembering that these courts are there to make a profit from this transaction. It is a court of what? Is it court of equity? I think it is. And this court must make a profit off each, at the point when it becomes too expensive to continue the charade, they're just going to dismiss the case. Now, this isn't a win, it's just a dismissal, and who cares about winning? If you can avoid court in the first place and avoid being charged with these victimless crimes, these tickets, these types of things, do it. I mean, you don't need to go to their court. You don't need to enter in their jurisdiction just because they ask you to, and that's all they can do is to ask for your consent to enter their jurisdiction. That's the only, all those bad words, those horrible words they use. Well, I'm going to put a warrant for your arrest. I'm going to send this. I'm going to do that. No, you have to consent to all of that. And gosh, if people just understood that, we'd win half the battles.
Exactly. So some people say, well, but what if I go there as a messenger and they try to arrest me? Well, of course, they can do whatever they want to do because they're like the mafia, And I don't mean to insult the mafia, but, they act like a criminal organization because that's, in fact, what they are. And that's why I tell people, do not attempt to go down this path unless you have a solid team of people that are willing to back you up morally and financially, because you need to have that, and then whoever you're sending to court cannot be, chickens that are going to get scared for whatever they do to you. Because if you leave, which is what happened to one fellow that I'm helping, he sent three guys that I think were probably, chickens dressed as guys, went to court, and then the prosecutor started intimidating them, and they left. And by leaving, they gave that make-believe judge the right to now enter a warrant for his arrest, and he got arrested. So if you're going to go down this path, you're going to have solid people with you that are going to stick it out all the way.
And in other words, they have to be dismissed.
I had a friend that did it all the way. Go ahead.
They have to be dismissed.
What do you mean?
The people, as opposed to leaving anytime they want to, they have to actually be dismissed by the judge?
Well, they just have to at least go in front of the judge and make the appearance. Because once the appearance is entered into the record, they cannot issue a warrant for whoever it is that didn't appear. Because, in fact, he did appear through the messenger. Different than him appearing through the attorney.
And this is no different than what's called an amicus curiae, someone who introduces a law into the court in the middle of a case called a friend of the court. You're just doing it in the initial stages of the case. and again, I guess it's important to note that the whole point here, right, is to avoid jurisdiction, is to avoid stepping through the bar and allowing the court to basically coerce you into contract through either verbal or other types of contractual obligations. And of course, it goes without saying that under no circumstances should you ever, either in writing or verbally, make a plea. Either, you know, your three choices are not guilty, guilty, or no contest. Never, never, never do that, because again, that is a contract court.
Yeah, and see, and what they always try to get you after they give you a ticket or whatever, you show up, you know, and they say, Mr. blah blah blah. How do you plea? That's the first thing they want to get out of you. So if you're there and they're asking you for a plea and you're there in your skin, well, now they can grab you and throw you in jail until they get a plea from you. You know, and they can come up with whatever excuse. They can hold you in contempt of court. They can do whatever they want to do in order to try to extract that plea from you, because without that plea, they cannot move forward.
Well, isn't it also kind of important to let the judge know that you do have witnesses, and that's the whole point of having people there in the first place, but you have witnesses to the case that are your consorts, your friends, whatever you want to call them, and they are more than willing to put a complaint in officially against that judge. What happens when a judge gets too many complaints?
Yeah, well, he's gonna find himself in the unemployment line.
How many complaints does it take?
Well, my understanding, it takes like three of them.
Just three, and nobody really knows they can do this, so they don't get many complaints, right?
Right, they don't get any. But actually, one good complaint could get a judge out of that court, because remember, it's all an illusion. So if that judge loses the illusion that he is being, fair, well, he can't be there anymore, because no one's going to want to go in front of him. Everybody's going to be afraid that they're not getting, quote-unquote, justice.
Now, Bert, I guess for the purposes of protecting ourselves and protecting this station, you are not giving legal advice today, correct?
No, I don't even know what that is.
I'm not really sure what that means either, but I know that I'm not doing it either, and certainly the micro effect is not in a position to give legal advice and would never do so. Just wanted to make that clear, because, you know, I don't understand legal advice. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't stand under the concept that I am bound by that rule. Anyway, thought that would be fun to include there.
Yeah.
Again, you are not an attorney. You are not in that club. You're not represented by the bar as your union as a union member. What you have done is read the law. You have gone in and you have studied the most important aspect of the law. The law that actually governs the bar, governs the attorneys, governs the court members and the judges. And that is what? The rules of court procedure?
Yeah, that's a very important thing to understand. Just because that just kind of like gives you an idea of how they operate. But But let me back up a little bit. Now, a lot of people don't realize that when they go into court and they start saying that they have constitutional rights, they're putting themselves directly under the legal system, because the Constitution is considered a legal document. So you should never say that you have constitutional rights. You should never say that that is your Constitution, because if you say that is your Constitution, you're saying those are your legal rights, which means those are your legal laws, which means anything that stems from that Constitution now applies to you. Okay?
And let's remember that remember that Fifth Amendment, so important, that it literally states that your life, your liberty, and your property can be taken with due process of law. You exactly. do not want that as your stated contractual right. You understand?
Right. So whenever you're quoting the Constitution, you must quote it in the proper, from the proper point of view. You have to say, you violated that Constitution. You never say, you violated my constitutional right, amendment, blah, blah, blah. No.
Well, now wait a minute. Now, I have to play devil's advocate to say it, because that judge can say, well, no, I didn't. And that is simply because he's not taking an oath. He says he takes an oath to the Constitution, but can you find that in writing?
Yes, actually, the Secretary of State of every state has on file the oath of office for every judge.
Right, but how many of them actually see what I'm getting at is that we found out that the Attorney General, the Governor, and many other offices in this state, in Utah, over 70% of our politicians have not legally, meaning in writing, signed, have not filed their oath of office.
Yeah, and when they don't have that, now you can file a suit against them for being an imposter of that office. Because without the oath, they're an imposter.
So would you request that oath in court before you even begin the procedure?
Definitely.
And what will they say?
They're going to pretend that they didn't hear you.
Isn't that funny? It's hilarious to watch a judge squirm and just ignore you completely as if you didn't ask them for something. It's great.
They do. It's just so funny. Or they change the subject really quick. That's why you whenever you go to court, you gotta have like a little script, and you have point A, point A, point B, point C, and.
Yeah.
You do not go to point B unless that judge addresses point A.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. You know, anybody wants to call in and ask Bert some questions, maybe he wants to get a little non-legal advice, please do so. We'll be on for another half hour. You're on The Story Behind the Story. We'll be back.
Yeah.
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
In the Michael Hoggard gift offer, first, Biblical Numerics of 9-11 shows you how the Twin Towers fall is related to the fall of the Babylon in Genesis 11. In Biblical Secrets Revealed, this double DVD shows you undeniable evidence that the Bible is divinely inspired in all its details, the true meaning of the two witnesses, 3 days in the tomb, 4 gospels, 5 smooth stones, 6 days, 7 seals, 8 people in the ark, 9 fruits of the Spirit, 10 commandments, the beast number 666. Then in the Da Vinci Code DVD, he shows you how the book and the movie directly attack the deity of Jesus Christ and the divine inspiration of the Holy Scriptures. It offers another Jesus another gospel, and another spirit. In The Secrets of Solomon's Key Revealed, he shows you the darkest, most diabolical secret in the world and how stem cells relate to the mark of the beast. Then in the DVD, Which Bible is Right for Me?, you'll discover how the modern translations of the Bible are actually tools that Satan is using to bring in a new world religion and a new world order. That's 5 titles, 6 2.5-hour DVDs valued at $170, all for a gift of just $65. Call 785-266-1112 or click prophecyclub.com. 785-266-1112 or prophecyclub.com. The Michael Hoggard gift offer.
Camping, hiking, backpacking, Alice packs, military surplus, tactical gear. The list goes on and on and on. You can find it at CJL Enterprise. That's ENTERPRIZE.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. We are open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year on the web. Again, it's CJL Enter, ENTERPRIZE.com. CJLEnterprise.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. CJL Enterprise.
In America, politicians are about to vote on the creation of a police state and a permanent state of war everywhere on Earth, including the homeland, Mein Führer. The U.S. Senate will be voting on a bill that will give this president and every future president the power to order the military to pick up and imprison, without charge or trial, civilians anywhere in the world, including America.
Illuminati, you'll never take control. Your new world order will lead to none at all.
Let's just go over that again, because it may seem insane or unhinged at first. The American president wants the power to arrest and detain anyone, anywhere, indefinitely, without charge or trial, forever. Yes, it still sounds insane.
Stay tuned. You're listening to The Micro Effect.
Folks, welcome back. Again, I want to thank you for joining us, me, and Bert, and remind you that Truot will be back tomorrow for your listening pleasure. I wanted to quote another case by the Supreme Court, which was actually in 1875, U.S. versus Cruikshank. And I want you again to listen very carefully to the verbiage that is used, and again, so you don't think that we're just talking out of our collective butts here. We got to understand what happens inside these courts. So let's just go into this case law here, and listen to what is said. It's a very important concept to understand. It says the quote, "The people," referring to people, again, not persons, but people, okay? "The people of the United States, resident," remember that word, resident, we'll have Bert explain what that means afterwards, "the people of the United States resident within any state are subject to two governments, one state and the other national," meaning federal, "but there need be no conflict between the two. The powers which one possesses, the other does not." Well, that's not exactly true anymore. "They are established for different purposes and have separate jurisdictions. Together, they make one whole and furnish the people of the United States with a complete government, ample for the protection of all their rights at home and abroad. True, it may sometimes happen that a person is amenable to both jurisdictions for one and the same act. It is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties. How can you have two sovereignties? And claims protection from both. The citizen cannot complain because he has voluntarily submitted himself to such a form of government. The citizen cannot complain because he has voluntarily submitted himself to such a form of government. Man, we could spend hours talking about what this case law actually says. But again, Bert, when this says and starts out with the people of the United States, referring to the natural men and women who reside on the land that is the United States, but then says the people resident within any state. What does that word
In that quote, they're pre-qualifying you first. They're admitting that you're a people, but then they say you're a people of, which means belonging to someone, right? Then they say that you are a resident residing within some jurisdiction. And a resident, only persons are resident. So the fact that you say that you're residing somewhere, you're admitting that you're acting as a person. And when you say you are a resident of a particular place, in reality, you are from the District of Columbia, which is where the United States is from, in a temporary arrangement wherever it is that you happen to be. So you're, in fact, a foreigner wherever it is that you are in, because you belong to the District of Columbia.
What? I mean, talk about a foreign language. The people of the United States resident within any state. That's what that means. People that are of the United States, basically owned by the United States, their personhood, and have residency within any state, meaning, I mean, geez, how... Going back to what you said before, that word, and I always forget what the word is, this is the witchcraft, the trickery and magic of legal ease. It's amazing.
Yes.
Words mean something else. I mean, they don't mean what you think they mean. It still blows my mind to read such things.
Yes, and then, you know, within that same quote, you say that, you know, the citizen cannot complain, right? So when you're in court complaining, it makes no sense. Because you're subjecting yourself to their jurisdiction, and then you're there complaining.
Yeah, you're coming in there, and it's like you're coming in and you're talking job turkey. You know, you're talking some other language. They don't understand what you're saying. You're talking in plain layman's English. I have rights under the Constitution. Well, guess what? Guy, you're not speaking the right language. You're not speaking the language of trickery and magic, and therefore we, the court, don't understand your complaint. Understand? Yes. We don't stand under your complaint is the correct way of saying that. Your complaint has no jurisdiction in our court. You're a citizen, a resident.
Yeah. So something here that I want to pass on to the listeners that they need to, you know, whenever you go into a duel or battle or whatever, you got to have certain weapons with you. One very important weapon that you need to have with you whenever you address any of these courts, regardless of what it is called a subpoena duces tecum. Okay? It spells, you know, the word subpoena and then D-U-C-E-S, and then the next word is T-E-C-U-M. And this is something that you, whenever you're invited into one of their courts, okay, you can bring this subpoena duces tecum, which is basically just a subpoena demanding certain documents. Okay? And this is five quick points that you should always demand. Remember, the Constitution applies to them, not necessarily to you. So you want to ask them to produce the article or quote from the Constitution of the United States of America. And then you can include the other organic documents if you want, the Articles of Confederation, Declaration of Independence, which grants them the right to do whatever it is that they're doing to you. Okay? Of course, they're not going to be able to produce any of these things, okay? But you need to ask them for that, because the average man or woman is going to say, well, yeah, they're operating under the Constitution, so they need to answer that. So this is what you want the jury to eventually hear. Then produce your sign and witness oath of office. Okay? Once they produce that oath, you say, thank you very much, I accept it. Now we're operating under your constitution, which you cannot violate. But unless you get their oath of office and demand it, they can operate under their local statute. So that's now, why you got to have their oath.
When you say, see, now people, again, let's clarify what the word demand means. That doesn't mean that you go up and you throw a temper tantrum and say, I want your oath. It means that you are making a legal requirement that before this case goes on, you're demanding, you've placed a legal demand that that document be produced, or this court, this case is a kangaroo court.
It's moot. It cannot move forward. It cannot move forward unless these things are produced. Then number three, produce the source of your right, which is greater than my unalienable right to do whatever it is that you were doing that they say you don't have a right to do. Because it's all a competition of rights.
Sure.
They always act like their right is higher than yours only because they have guns.
Well, and I think more importantly, they act like their right, their authority is higher than God's.
Mm-hmm.
And whoa, well, good luck trying to prove that.
Right, so when you're asking them to produce the source of their right, which is higher than your unalienable rights, that's basically what you're saying, because your unalienable rights come from God. So they must have an authority that's higher than God. Okay, number four, produce your sign and witness affidavit. Everybody needs to understand what an affidavit is. Your witness affidavit that you have the right to detain or put in prison or blah, 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 this man or woman for violating your corporate regulations without this man's or this woman's or the people's consent. So they must produce an affidavit that is signed and sworn and, stamped by the court or stamped by a public notary that's going to override your affidavit that says that they don't have the right to do what it is that they're doing to you. It's a competition of affidavits. That's how you argue with these people. You don't go into court and you start opening your mouth arguing. You do it all on paper and you do it all through affidavits that have been either witnessed by three people or stamped by a public notary.
And this is the paperwork that your friend of the court that you're sending in is ensuring that the judge has received.
Exactly. And then the last one is produce a copy of the contract signed by Freeman, blah, 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 which makes Freeman, blah, 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 a subject of your corporation or subject of your body politic or subject, of your society or a subject of your nation or a subject of the United States or a subject of anyone besides God. Those 5 points, they must answer before anything can move forward. So that's something that you need to take with you every time, be that a traffic ticket, be that whatever, and they have to answer it before they move forward.
But you generally will send that into the court first thing before making before your friend makes an appearance.
Exactly, and a lot of these things you can do yourself, prior to the court appointment. You can go to the court clerk's office. You bring always two copies of everything. Have them keep a copy, and then they take your copy and they stamp it with a time and their little emblem saying court, blah, blah, blah. And then that gives you the evidence that they received it, and it's also time-stamped. So if some of these papers, like this one, for example, you could put in a limited time. You can say you must respond this within usually 21 days is the standard number of days that you give. That you have 21 days to respond to this. Failure to respond to one of these points is evidence enough for dismissing your whatever it is that you have against me.
And by doing that, you're actually creating a contract that that they can break if they don't respond in 21 days.
Exactly. So everything you do with them, you always want to put some kind of a time clause on it so that now you can reasonable. Come back and say, well, you didn't answer it.
A reasonable time, not something that can be proven to be unfair or unwarranted.
Yeah, that's why 21 days is basically the accepted number of days. And then if they don't accept it, then they acquiesce to the fact that they have no authority over you and you have no obligation to them.
But it's also important, I think, to point out to people that you do not ignore anything that comes to you.
Exactly.
Because the same rules apply to you. When you know, this is the rule of consent. Now, you can verbally consent and you can in writing consent, or you can verbally not consent and in writing not consent. But if you do not answer a letter that comes to you in the mail from the court and it tells you you have till this time to respond, the same rules apply to you. You are presumed to have consented to whatever they sent you in the mail because you did not respond. Therefore, your silence is consent. And that's a huge, huge, huge important thing to understand. It applies both ways. It's a two-way street here.
Yes, yes. And that's one thing. So anyway, that's one thing that I really wanted to make sure that people understand, that this is your right and this is something that you must exercise. Now, before we run out of time, I really wanted to discuss this thing about the Social Security that you wanted me to touch on.
Yeah.
I have two children. None of them have Social Security numbers, or their numbers begin with zero and end with zero.
Well, now, okay? when you had those children, what happened? I mean, surely the nurses were after you with guns to try to get them, you know, indoctrinated into the system.
Almost, because I did a lot of research, and I come to find out that the hospitals actually make a good chunk of change every time they give the name of your child to the Social Security Administration. Now, when you're in the hospital, they give you a form, which is basically if you would like to get a Social Security number. And they have a little box that you check, no, I do not want one. But the truth is, if you check, I do not want one, but you give them the name of your child, guess what you're going to get in 30 days? A nice little card that says Social Security Administration with your child's name in capital letters and the number.
Okay? That's your person.
What's that?
That's your person.
Yeah, they just created a person out of your baby without his consent and through your ignorance. So what you want to do is, while you're at the hospital, make sure both parents and grandparents and everybody in the family is under the complete agreement to not give the name of the child to anyone in that hospital. Now, you're going to be harassed the whole time you're in there, probably every 30 minutes or so, someone's going to come in and ask you if you have decided on the name for your child yet. And in my particular case, we were literally walking out the door, and this one nurse was tapping me on the shoulder, asking me if we had come up with a name for the child yet. And they did that on both occasions, on both of my children. And I did not give them a name, and therefore, you know, the train was not moved down the track to get the kids to have a Social Security number. Then people ask me, well, how can you get a passport, you know, without a Social Security number? How could you do all these things? Well, you don't need a passport to get a Social Security number. And I have evidence of that my children have. They have a passport.
You don't need a Social Security number to get a passport, you mean?
No, you don't. And the truth is, you don't even need a Social Security number to do anything in this commerce system, because the Social Security number is you saying that you are an employee of the United States. And any business that demands that you give them a Social Security number without you, you know, otherwise they won't do business with you, that's discrimination. Because if that business needs a number in order to do business with you, they can create a number for you. So that is a lie, that you got to have a Social Security number in order to operate within their business. Because
you're basing this on legal precedent.
This is just the way everything works. Because a private business, well, technically every corporation belongs to the United States. That's getting into another thing. But no one can demand your Social Security number from you unless they are going to pay you Social Security benefits. Period.
That's all it was originally intended for, huh?
What's that?
That's all it was originally intended for.
Yes, and that's all what it legally is. No,
I know I've read the. I asked you for the precedent of the law, and I know I've read it before.
Yeah, it's in the Social Security Administration.
Yeah, the Act.
Mm-hmm. And then it also says that you cannot use a Social Security number as a form of ID.
All right, well, let's talk about that, because what have you done for yourself in this case? Because you, unfortunately, were a victim of the ignorance of your parents, which is not to say anything bad about your parents. It's just a fact of life that everybody names their child in the hospital, and those nurses are on a witch hunt to get that name. So how did you then, you know, basically say, no, I don't want this thing anymore?
Yeah, well, I the one thing about Social Security number, everybody says, well, what do? Do I get rid of it? What do? Well, the Social Security number is no different than a number that you would get if you join some kind of a health club, and they give you a little membership card with a number on it. So all you have to do is just quit using it. Okay, that's step number one. Okay.
Whoa. So does that mean that I can go over to my local, let's just use an example of Walmart or Blockbuster Video or anywhere else, and then when on the application itself, when they ask for Social Security number, I can say, no, I don't have one?
Yeah, you just put zeros across it.
Even though I have one?
Yeah.
And they then cannot use that as a reason not to hire me officially. They can not hire me and say it's for another reason, but officially they can't use that as an excuse not to hire me?
No, because that would be discrimination. That means that you have to be a U.S. employee in order for them to hire you. That's wrong.
Unfortunately, that is the reality of life at the moment. All these places are becoming, you know, E-Verify, joining the computer base, the computer databases that are, you know, require that, and they're under a lot of pressure to enforce the Social Security number. That's the problem, of course, on the inverse of this argument, is that just about anywhere you go, they're going to require it. And, you know, that's the devil's advocate here, unfortunately.
No, that's the thing. And we have to be basically willing to sue. I mean, if you're going to stand up for your rights, Dolph, okay, tell him to just hang on. But you have to be willing to fight. If you're not willing to fight, then just be happy and, you know, accept your punishment, your exactions, and everything else. But if you want to stand up for your rights, then you have to be willing to take these people to court and go through the, you know, through the grinding wheel.
Yeah, and that's what it boils down to, and it's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to face. And you know, you're one of the few people that do this with children. I mean, I a lot of people use children as an excuse for everything. I don't want to endanger my children. I don't want to, you know, do. No, they're children. Oh my gosh, what the greatest political weapon ever conceived is children. I mean, geez. But I have to say, I admire the heck out of you. You did this with just you can do this really with just a one page letter, correct? By actually sending that to.
You mean to do which part?
Well, to get rid of to say that you don't want your officially declaring that your Social Security is null and void, it cannot be used against you anymore.
Well, you just simply yourself need to stop using it.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but you took it a step further, right?
Yeah. So I'm in that process right now. Is basically I want to get my all the money that has been placed into that Social Security account, I want to get it back.
Oh boy, if you figure that one out, you're going to be the hero of a generation. I will tell you that, sir. Listen, we are about at the end of our show. I wish we had another few hours to really go over this. is your plate pretty full? I hear your phone ringing. I know you've got, I guess, what we'll refer to as clients. Who are seeking your non-legal advice.
Well, actually, we're on our way right now to meet with the county sheriff. We're going to have a few questions to ask him.
Oh, gosh, I wish we would have got into that story. That was a funny story. We'll definitely do this again at some point in the future. Do you have contact info? I know you have the onlyfreemen.wordpress.com and your do not consent, but tell people how to contact you.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is to contact me at do not consent 83, Bert, at do not consent 83. No, wait a minute. Just go to, what's my email again? I forgot. Do not consent 83@yahoo.com.
There you go.
And then from there, if I decide that I'm going to help you, then we'll communicate with the other email that I have that I only use for people that I help, but I have, additional information and I'm trying to add more at, onlyfreemen.com. Because I know another website, but that's the best way to do it. And, you know, right now my hands are pretty full, so I'm only willing to help people that are going to go over there.
So do not contact Bert if you want legal advice. Contact Bert if you want to stick it to the system. All right. Thanks for joining us today, Bert. It's been a pleasure serving the people who have stuck with me to listen to all of my rantings and ravings. Throughout the back tomorrow, I thank you again. Take care. The station and proud of
on April 12th, 1955, news of Dr. Jonas Salk's polio vaccine was made public. Since that time, polio has been virtually eradicated from every country where Salk's vaccine has remained in use. Today, tens of billions of dollars are spent each year on medical research. Research scientists the world over are experiencing exponential gains in the tools and the technology available to assist them. Yet, despite all of this, more Americans are taking prescription medications than at any other time in our history, and no one is being cured. Why? Well, J. Thomas Shaw has done the research, and now in his new thriller, The RX Factor, we can all find out. You owe it to yourself to explore this mystery. The key will be in your hands once you own The RX Factor. TheRXFactor.com. It's a great book, and you deserve to know it. TheRXFactor.com.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
The Prophecy Club is sponsoring a Fullness of Time Prophecy Cruise. It's the biggest ship for 1 week with four awesome speakers on the largest cruise ship in the world, the Oasis of the Seas by Royal Caribbean. This Prophecy Cruise will be a revelatory time of preparation. You will enjoy prophetic worship, ministry, and Bible prophecy in 9 2-hour meetings on the cruise with me and three prophets, Leslie Johnson, Rick Madison, and Bree Keaton. Leslie has given over 5,000 prophecies. Jesus spoke to Rick while he was in a brain-dead coma for 27 days and said, "Go, tell everyone I am real, I still perform miracles, and I am coming in this generation." Rick's healing ministry has seen thousands saved, healed, and 20 people awakened from comas. A cloud of glory follows Bree Keaton everywhere she goes. So come, for 1 week, you will be bathed in worship, Holy Ghost meetings, prophetic ministry, and Bible prophecy, preparing you for the end times. Our Valentine cruise departs Fort Lauderdale February 9 through 16 of 2013. The ports of call are Nassau, Bahamas, St. Thomas, and St. Martin's. Cabin prices start at $750 and go up. For information, call Pastor Sharon at 209-588-9565 or email heavenlycruises@gmail.com.